Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Friday. Today, we have an emergency podcast. Yes, this is an emergency podcast. We needed to have another one, so we had Dan Weber on, coming on the show, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist. He had to come on and answer all the questions. We got a ton of questions overnight. Of course, USC losing 17-12 to the Washington Huskies, despite being a 2.5 touchdown favorite in the game. USC falls to 3-2, 1-2 in the conference, and we wanted to bring Dan Weber on to talk about that. And I think you guys know our contact information because we've got so many questions this week again. But if you want to get a hold of us, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's the email address. Website is peristylepodcast.com. You can leave a voicemail there or give us a call at 641-715-3900, extension 816-646. If you leave us a question, just realize we do have different shows. So Dan will be on, Coach Harvey Hyder on. I'll do some solo ones. We'll have recruiting ones. Please be specific of who you're leaving the question for. If you say, hey, everybody, I'm not sure who to direct it to. Everyone's not on the show at the same time. So please be specific. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Go to itunes.com/peristylepodcast. All right, we got all that out of the way. Want to bring in Dan Weber. It's an emergency podcast, Dan. We had to come on. We had to talk about what was going on. USC fans very upset of what happened last night at the Coliseum.
Yeah, and rightly so. When you're 2.5 touchdown favorite, as you said, and you're lucky to score one touchdown in the whole game, you know, it's hard to win by 2.5 touchdowns when you only score one. And it was just, you know, one of those nights that there were so many things you could second guess about that game. You really don't know where to start. And part of the problem is the second guessing goes all the way back to, you know, the hiring of Steve Sarkisian. So if you're second guessing that from day one, that second guess never leaves unless you really, to use the baseball analogy, you knock it out of the park. And that hasn't happened with Sark.
It has not. And I did a radio interview a little bit earlier today, and they're, you know, kind of asking about that. And it's true. Fair or not, the way Steve Sarkisian got to this job was, you know, under, you know, there was people that didn't want him there. There was people that just, not even that they didn't like him. Some people didn't. Some people didn't want to have Lane Kiffin 2.0, but it was more about Ed Orgeron and people liked the guy that was there before. So there was a lot of turmoil, I guess you could say, when Sark was hired, and those people that kind of didn't want it to happen then, they're seeing this kind of layout and they're like, I told you so, basically. And even, it's funny, the supporters on the Peristyle, it's actually been pretty good. We thought the message board on USCFootball.com would be in total meltdown, but people are actually kind of getting along because most people are on the same side of this. Even the most, you know, adamant supporters of Steve Sarkisian are saying, you know what, I just don't think this is the right guy for the job and I'm ready to move on. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had two camps originally. You could say three. You had the camp that said, Orgeron and his staff had done such a great job, and they really did. That was one of the remarkable coaching jobs ever when they, you know, took over for Lane after that Arizona State game firing and all that. And I think an awful lot of us, including me, thought you give those guys another chance. You give them a chance. They stuck together. They rallied that team around. They maybe didn't have enough players, or they'd have won the Notre Dame game. You know, the only really, you know, sub toe was the UCLA game, but they didn't do it as badly as, you know, the guys in front of them and behind them did against UCLA. So there's that. And then there was the fact that I don't think people thought it was really a national search. And there was the controversy over Chris Peterson's interview where the idea that, you know, the story we've all heard is that they went into the interview with Peterson, who was maybe the only legitimate national person that they talked to, with a very negative, you know, cast to the interview about, you know, what makes you think you could be successful in LA and is your personality the right, you know, and soon as they got out of that interview, essentially they hired Sark. Although there are those who say, you know, that they kind of had an agreement all along. And that's been a problem for Sark. That has not made his job easier or, you know, it's so easy for people to go there. And you could be on the camp that, oh, they should have gone out and hired Nick Saban, or the camp that said, oh, they should have given Ed another, you know, year at the very least. And that makes it tough. Sark, that was a tough job coming in here.
You know, it definitely was. And now you're saying, like, all, you know, a lot of the second guessing coming back, but people, it's almost united the fan base, which is probably not a good sign for Steve Sarkisian. Now he can, you know, win people back over. I think he did just last week against Arizona State going on and winning on the road. It's a tough slate of games coming up, you know, on the road in Notre Dame, Utah, and Cal. You know, if he sweeps those games, yeah, I mean, I think people will probably be back and, you know, realize how much talent this team has. And, you know, they'll probably, you know, a lot of people supporting him again. There'll be some that just never will, and they'll think this is just going to keep happening over and over again. But there's an opportunity there with the schedule to get things back. And, but one of the things, Dan, we had our conference call with Steve Sarkisian today, and he was asked about, did you meet with the players? Because this is a pretty devastating loss. You're a big home favorite. You lose two games in a row, like you had mentioned, the first time since 2001, you know, Pete Carroll's first year. You know, that really doesn't happen at the Coliseum. But he had an opportunity. He said, you know, we were scheduled to meet with the players on Sunday, and that's what we're going to do because the staff is kind of all out recruiting and everything right now. But I got a tweet from a USC fan, and I think it was a female. I think she said, you know, shouldn't they just change that? Shouldn't they say, hey, we have to have a meeting this morning. We need to talk about this. And I thought that was a pretty good point that at this point, shouldn't you change things around? Maybe your recruiting schedule can wait, because really what's going on with the team right now should take precedent, and they need to do something to try to kind of fix that. Get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think they did in the Arizona State week. We all thought, gosh, they need to react to the Stanford game, and they didn't. And they really underplayed things, and things worked out. It was like, let's be cool. We're going to be fine. Everything's okay. We're not going to change stuff around and all that. And it absolutely, you know, turned out the way that game played out. And gosh only knows whether there's a connection between how they prepared for it, other than the fact that they did talk about and emphasize the whole turnover thing and takeaways. And that's how that game played out. So I think they definitely have a tendency, Sark does, to try to keep things cool. He's got a history of, you know, after these terrible losses, you know, he's got a history of coming back and winning the next game. So there is kind of a confidence level, you know, with him on the bounce back. Now, we'll see. You know, as you said, he also had a 9-1 record in after bye weeks.
Yeah.
And now it's 9-2. So history doesn't always, you know, tell you where you're going to go. You know, they did have the fact that they did have them. I mean, those kids don't have the the morning classes. So you think they might have had the opportunity, but I guess there are times when you say, you know, they're better off getting away from this. This is so, you know, we don't need to keep going back there, and let them have Friday, Saturday off and see if they can come back fresh. They're going to get another extra day to get ready for Notre Dame. So, you know, that's the good thing with a Sunday practice. So I'm sure that's their calculation. Whether that's the right calculation or not, as Sark said in the conference call, it's a formula that everybody's trying to figure out. And he had to admit, he said, I'm not dodging the question. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I know there are people who will object to that and say, you know, you're a, you know, seventh year as a big time college football coach, as a head coach. Maybe you ought to have that figured out by now, but, you know, we'll see where this all goes. But again, you know, when you get second guessed on whether you should have or not have a meeting, on a day off, you know, you're probably in some serious trouble.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into some of these questions we have. So I think the plan, I'll just let people know. We got a whole bunch of questions coming in. I'm sure we're going to get more. It's just as soon as I like write some of these down or copy them to my little Word documents, I seem to get a whole bunch more in the inbox. So we're going to have Dan on. We'll try to have Harvey Hyde over the weekend sometime with different schedule. I might do a solo one and just kind of play some of the voicemails. We get tons of voicemails, like all the people's rants. So maybe I'll just do a solo one a little bit later on too. And we'll definitely try to have some other, national guests on talking about, you know, Steve Sarkisian, because there was, I got at least three, Dan, columns, national columnists that were calling for Sark's head. And, you know, so it's not just the fans. The national media is calling for it too. I don't know if I've ever seen something like that, like a unanimous, like, yep, USC just hired the wrong guy. They should move on. It was just kind of the sentiment last night after the game.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I mean, we're talking about a night game, a late night game if you're East Coast time for some of those guys. And they're writing absolutely, I mean, you know, USA Today comes out, Dan Wilkin, with a, not only, you know, Sark's got to go, but he's got the new hire and Chip Kelly. You know, Pete Thamel, just going back to the Sark and Peterson situation, and, you know, Washington gets Peterson and USC doesn't get him, and, you know, kind of mocking USC for you got the, you know, bad end of that deal. And then Stuart, you know, Mandel at Fox just came right out and, you know, said that if USC ever wants to be USC again, they can't be that with Sark. I mean, just flat out.
Yeah.
He's not the guy. I've never seen that. Not that instantaneous. I mean, maybe over the next week or something, you might see it play out in all the different media. I mean, I think, you know, tune in to, you know, College Game Day tomorrow and see what they have after, you know, a couple of days to digest this. They've been pretty positive until, you know, more positive than not. And I'll be interested to see how that thing turns around, in terms of, you know, Herb Street and Corso and, you know, the different, you know, guys, I guess Pollock and, who else was out here? Pollock and,
Desmond
Palmer,
Howard,
I guess,
and
were here.
Oh.
Yeah. So how that all goes, I'm not optimistic.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. So Stuart Mandel wasn't at the game, but he's in California. He's up north. Pete Thamel, who wrote one of those columns, was at the game. And I talked to him before the game. I talked to him at halftime, and we were kind of scratching our heads like, what's going on? But I never got the impression he was writing a Sark's Gotta Go column. But, you know, obviously – that changed as the game went on. You kind of saw what was going on. And it's funny, Jana pointed out, my wife was watching, you know, the Twitter and stuff after the game, and Dan Wilkin from USA Today, he had his column up like 10 minutes or something after the game ended, like full on Sark's the wrong guy. And so he had to be working.
That was pretty amazing. I mean, it was like, you almost can't do that on deadline. Unless you really got an idea at halftime, that's where you're going. And he must have decided, you know, I'm going there now. When 17-6, I guess he was going there. And he's probably thinking twice when it's 17-12 and USC's got the ball back,
yeah,
and running it pretty well. And then they stop running it. And he's saying to himself, whoa, am I lucky? And I can write this same, I can keep writing this column.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I've never seen it before. Never seen it on a late night game like that. I don't know that anything like that's ever happened where it's just this unanimous. That's shocking.
Yeah.
That they all came to that same conclusion. Boom, just like that. Now, what that probably tells you is just as USC fans have had this kind of turmoil in their minds since the, you know, the whole selection process, I would guess that tells you some of these national guys have had their minds kind of made up about this for a while. And, you know, the Stanford game got them thinking, and then, you know, they saw last night and it just, you know, reaffirmed everything that they've been thinking. Because mostly you don't write those kinds of things on the spur of the moment from one game.
Right. Yeah. Well, the fans obviously, kind of agree with the national columnists out there. There's a lot of, you know, people that are upset with what's going on. And so I'll play you this first voicemail. Not very happy with Steve Sarkisian. Here you go.
Hey, this message is for anybody who wants to take it. Chris from Fontana calling. Long-time listener, haven't called in a while. Enough is enough is enough. Sark has got to go. USC needed a hero tonight. They needed a hero and a coach. They didn't get it, and they needed a hero and a quarterback, and they didn't get it. I know Cody's been great this year statistically, but he, in my opinion, is not a quarterback you can hang your hat on when the team needs it the most. That's just what I've seen over the past couple of years. Sark, you know, and his coaching staff, you can blame Sark or the whole staff. I mean, it doesn't really matter. These guys are not getting up for these games. There's no reason they should be losing to a Washington, team at home. I don't care how good their damn defense is. You know, going for, the field goal at the end of the game instead of just, going for it and trying to get the touchdown right then and there. Once again, a conservative, soft approach. Not going to get it done. I was a Sark, you know, apologist. I had faith in him, but, I think this was just the final blow. I really think he's got to go. Somebody needs to come in, grab this program by the horns and, steer it in the right direction and start getting some wins. There's too much talent for this to be happening. Love the podcast, guys. Listen to you guys every week. Fight on anyway. And until next week, boys. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the question is, if you look at, I mean, there are people at USC who will argue that USC has the, you know, greatest college football tradition. I mean, I'm trying to think who did the survey, and they added up all the kinds of points you get for Hall of Famers and the NFL and number one draft picks and overall draft pick, all, and national championships and what have you. And there's at least one that says USC is number one, you know, in the history. But whether you say, you know, USC is or Notre Dame is or Alabama is, you know, they're in the top three all time. And if you're USC, I think you absolutely must have a coach who people kind of just recognize as one of the top handful of coaches in college football. And when USC does have one of those guys, they win national championships. It's that simple. You know, Pete Carroll is that guy. You didn't know he was at the time. He got here, and then he was that guy. You win national championships. John McKay, the same thing. They didn't know when they got him. They didn't know the first couple of years, but he was that guy, and he was a kind of a transformative guy in college football. And he, you know, he won national championships. So if USC has the guy, they're going to win. And there are people who think they didn't go out and get the guy. And there aren't many of those guys. I mean, winning at the very top level of college football is really hard to do. I mean, there are so few people that can do that. And you probably can't, you know, go for anybody less than that. I mean, look at the 90s with USC with that, you know, run of coaches when they didn't go out and get the best guy. And that's, you know, that's the question. I mean, you know, whether you agree with Athlon or not, at the beginning of the year before, you know, in the summer with their, you know, magazine, when they came out and ranked the, you know, the 12 Pac-12 coaches, and Sark was ranked ninth. You can't be the head coach at USC and be ranked ninth. Well, whether that's a fair ranking or an unfair ranking, you can't be that guy and be at USC. It just doesn't match. Still remember, first time we went to a Michigan Penn State game, covering, actually was working in Pennsylvania. And I remember it was at the height of Joe Paterno's success. And you're standing there on the field, before the game, you know, in the big house, and you're looking over at Michigan and you say, wow, they've got the most wins all time in college football. Some people would say they've got the best uniforms in college football. Some people would say they've got the best fight song. At the time, they had the biggest stadium in college football. And I said, and I look over and I said, but their coach is Gary Muller. I said, what's wrong with this picture? You know, you can have those other things all going for you, but your head coach is Gary Muller. And I'm looking at Penn State. And I said, they don't have the uniforms. They don't have this and that. But they got Joe, and Joe was really, really coaching it up then, and his staff and all, you know, before all the other stuff happened. And it was, kind of an easy win for Penn State. That was their first time, at Michigan. And it really, really matters. You've got to have a guy that matches your program. See what happened at Alabama when they got Nick Saban. I mean, what happened at Ohio State when they got Urban Meyer? I mean, this isn't rocket science. You get a good coach at those, handful of schools, you're going to be very, very good. And you say, oh, well, easier said than done. But you got to do it. You got to make that effort to say, we're going to get the very best person possible for this job. And that's the thing. Sark wants to be that guy, or wanted to be that guy. He's got to convince people he is that guy.
That's a good point, Dan. We'll see going forward. We have more coaching stuff too, but there are some other questions I wanted to get to. Melvin wanted to know, besides Stua Cravens, who else do you think could step up and be a leader to help this team? And he said, again, we cannot come from behind. So who can lead this team, lead USC in those fourth quarter moments to give us a chance to win? From Melvin.
Well, I mean, here's the problem, for example. Let's say you had the best running back in the history of college football in that game in the fourth quarter. If you ask him to do nothing but pass block, what good is that? I mean, that's part of the problem. I mean, and this was always the problem. I still remember how often, say, when Lane was the coach, and you kept thinking, well, they got this, they got this, they got this, they got that. But there's Lane. And you say, they'll be all right if Lane does this or that or figures this out. But if he doesn't, and if you end up getting yourself in situations where you say, who could lead this team? The coach has to lead the team, really. You know, Sua, for example, Sua's sitting on the sidelines when they're not running the ball. I mean, there's nothing Sua can do about that, you know, even if he were in the game. Playing both ways. You'd have to give it to him. So I think that's the problem as much as anything is you got to have guys doing the right things. For example, last night, you know, as hard as Adoree Jackson tried, he tried to do everything he could think of. Why they weren't able to get anybody open. I mean, maybe they had a couple of times where Cody really missed somebody downfield, but there wasn't much of that. They were getting pressure on the quarterback and able to pretty much shut down the wide receivers. I mean, that was an amazing performance by their defense. But they're a younger team than USC is. And for them, for Washington to be able to perform like that, was kind of shocking, and that USC doesn't seem to be able to reach that level, on defense. I mean, people say, well, they don't have the same kind of D-line that they've had or that. I guarantee you they've got as good a D-line as Washington has. And their linebackers are as good as Washington, or their secondary is as good as Washington. Now, the injuries didn't help, but there's a performance thing that's just not happening.
Yeah.
And that goes to the coach. So I think it's really hard to try to say we're going to find a player to lead us. And the fact that Cody was off for whatever reason, it was stunning. I mean, for those who go to practice, he had nothing but good practices this week. Everything looked good. And then, from the first play of the game, he looked as off as he's ever looked. I mean, he didn't ever look that off. When he was, in a quarterback battle with Wittick, when they were out there sharing time,
yeah.
He didn't ever look that out of it. You can't even describe what was going on, and I don't think he knew. He couldn't explain it after the game, and Sark couldn't explain it. And I don't think we've got any good answers about that.
Let's go to another voicemail, Dan, and hear some more what USC fans have to say. Here you go.
Hi, guys. This is Don calling from New York City. Fight on from the East Coast. This question is for Coach Dan Weber. Dan, does it seem to you that Coach seems like he's pretty much overthinking this? The last two games that we played against Stanford and Washington, it seems like it wasn't the players that made the mistake. It seemed like the coaches. It just seems like the lights are too bright for Sark out here. And it seems like, you know, it's different when you're offensive coordinator, but now that you're a head coach, you pretty much have to make all the choices. You know, it was obvious that he had to make the call based on Cody Kessler. It seemed like he was rattled all night by that Washington defense. And it just seemed like if you gave Ronald Johnson maybe two more carries, he was going to bust one for about 60 yards or 40 yards or 20 yards, which he did do one time, and he just ran from it or stopped doing it. And you know, that's what I meant by ran by. I apologize. But he just stopped doing it. So it just seems like to me the coaches are losing this game for us, you know, these last two games. And that's pretty much it. But thank you, guys. You guys are doing a great job. Keep it up. Fight on. From the East Coast, all day, every day. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good observation from the East Coast, to say the least. And Sark can't really tell you, for example, as we asked in the conference call, why did you stop running? Why did you get, you go three and out, basically, and throw the ball three times when, you had plenty of time. Could have scored, game would have been over. And and in a game where you're not getting anybody open, not much, where they're getting lots of pressure on Cody, and Cody looks a little, a little bit rattled. So we really don't have a good answer as to why, Sark will say, yeah, now he looks back at it, and Cody got sacked on. They were third and six. And the fact, they just lose 3 yards, but that cost them the field goal. I mean, so the field goal, 3 yards closer, he'd at least hit the field goal. But, Sark said now, yeah, I would have probably run on third and six. Again, they completed a pass that got the 4 yards, but they also, had an incompletion and then a sack. So, they threw the ball three times, and two things, didn't work out very well, and one was just for 4 yards. I mean, I was thinking last night, I don't think I've ever seen a situation. They got the ball down to the 11-yard line, and it's Trey Madden gains 9 yards. And so now it's second and one at the 11, and they throw the next two plays. They pass the ball, and they complete two passes, and no penalties, and it ends up fourth and one on the 11. I mean, when's the team ever done that, where you got – 1 yard to go, you complete two passes, and you still have 1 yard to go. Just the thought that those are the passes you're having to throw, having to complete, and your run game's going well. You've got Ronald Jones averaging, I guess, 8.1 yards, and Trey averaging 7.1 yards a carry. They're telling you what to do. I mean, basically, Washington is giving you your game plan. They're, with what they're doing, the way they're stopping the wide receivers and the way they're getting pressure on Cody, and you're running the ball well, that's not hard. That's not a hard call. That's one of those ones where you don't have to make a call on the sidelines. The other team's making it for you. You just do it. You say, okay, fine, thank you. Thank you very much. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And especially if you think, not having your center, your possible, All-American center, Max Turk, in there, and that's causing you some problems. Didn't seem to cause them any problems in their run game. I mean, they were running the ball, up the middle there, and I thought Toa and Vianney and those guys, and when you talk to them, they were really proud of how they ran the ball. And you ask them, what do you think about when they went away from the run, and they kind of look at you like, I don't know why we did that, They don't have a good answer.
Yeah.
And no one does. But, Sark doesn't have a good answer. And
that's part of the problem.
just can't go away from when they're and again, Sark says, well, at times you're asking me why we you know, why we can't run the ball. Now you're asking why we can't pitch. All you want is for them to do what's available and what they're doing well. And last night that was running the ball. And if they could have run the ball in, you're in four down zone in your territory already. So it's befuddling that they went away from the run.
Befuddling. I like that, Dan. Stephen Poway has a thought here. He said, sad night in USC football history. Another collapse, but this one was worse than the Stanford game. An unranked opponent that also had an anemic offense, but ours was just worse. Very little to cheer about here. I think Sark must be thinking, quote, karma's a bitch, unquote, after bailing out on Washington and bringing his entire staff with him, leaving the cupboard bare. They look like the lesser of the two evils tonight. Question. The passing game was not working. Cody just seemed off. Adoree seemed off. The schemes were off, trying to run the wheel route with Adoree going to the left side rather than the right side of the field, et cetera, et cetera. So why not try to establish the running game, which actually showed promise in the early going? Related to this, I was really impressed with some of Anuku's blocking tonight when he was in at fullback. Why not keep him in and drive more huge holes for the speedier backs? I literally felt sorry for the defensive player he pancaked early in the game tonight. It's going to be a long season, I'm afraid. I have no confidence in this team right now. Steve and Poway.
Yeah, Steve, I think I overlooked the fullbacks. The fullbacks were right there with the offensive line, you know, trying to figure out why they went away from the run game and how much they would have loved to, you know, keep pounding it. And we've got no answer. And that's also, I think, a difficult issue for the coaches, because you're going to have to, when you do have that Sunday meeting, I mean, those kids have questions. Why, you know, if you think you as a fan have questions, what do you think of as a player? Well, you're one of those offensive linemen, you're one of those fullbacks, and you're thinking, why did we not do what we were obviously doing well? Why did we go away from that? And again, that's the big puzzle, you know, from last night's game. And it carries over, you know, from the game that I can't get out of my mind from a year ago at Utah, when they're, you know, they've got the lead, they've got the ball on the 27-yard line with 3 minutes to go, 3rd and 2, and they try 2 trick plays, not 2 running plays, not keeping the clock going, 2 trick plays, both of which stop the clock, and neither of which worked. And, overthinking, you know, under not understanding, I just don't know. But, man, it's tough, because you feel sorry. And this was hard last night talking to those kids, because they really don't get it. They know what happened. They just don't understand why. How did this happen to us? Why did this happen? And there aren't a lot of good answers.
There are not, and we're looking for them, and that's why the people are sending us the questions. We'll do our best to try to answer them as much, but it's we see this team. We've seen this team quite a bit, and we're all, you know, probably as baffled as most of you are. Dan and Tustin wrote in, Dan. He said, it's time to cut down the Pete Carroll coaching tree. Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian's all offense all the time, without regard to defense, has clearly failed USC, and it's time to move on. While there's no denying they can both recruit, there's also no denying they cannot be successful as head coaches. The main difference between Carroll and these two pretenders is defense for Pete was preeminent. Defense under Kiffin and Sarkisian was an afterthought. I followed USC for 50 years, and I'm personally sick and tired of watching the pass-happy, helter-skelter offenses these two serve up. These guys think they are Norm Chow. Believe me, it doesn't make sense. They're only a cheap facsimile is what he's trying to say. We need to go back to tough-as-nails defenses, intimidating running games, and throw when we need to throw, maybe even to one of those extinct beasts called a tight end. Hold on to your hats, boys. The remainder of the year is not going to be pretty. Dan in Tustin.
Well, from one Dan in Tustin to another Dan in Tustin, tight ends? Are tight ends allowed to catch the ball? I thought they were, they're really, you can actually throw the ball to a tight end. Huh. Who knew? You learn something every day, Ryan. You can't even imagine why they've gone. I know they think they need to have them blocking and they need to, run the ball. If you're going to, use your tight end as a, as an H-back or a tackle. But, I think the physicality, they've talked about getting more physical. It didn't look more physical last night. I think in the fourth quarter, the defensive line started looking more physical, actually playing more physical. And when you ask them, they said they weren't doing anything different. It certainly was different. And it was just, was it just attitude? Just the crowd getting involved and all that? I don't know. But, one of the problems that they had was that the ability of Washington on the first couple of downs to get 4 and 5 yards and have, third and short. And a lot of that involved just, taking the USC's D line and driving it. And, there was a reason, Cameron Smith had, a team leading 12 tackles is very often he was the first guy to even make contact, when they're running that, ball straight ahead. They weren't meeting any resistance until the second level. And that can't happen. You've got to, they don't have the personnel to play the 3-4 is probably the case. Whether you need to be able to go up there and, play, four down. But, teams certainly seem to have figured out some things on film against USC. And I guess what's so disheartening is Washington comes in here young, not much expected of them, and they play exactly, they had a personality on offense and defense. They executed. They knew exactly what they wanted to do, how they wanted to win that football game, and they won the football game exactly the way they had to. If you'd have put down a score and said, what kind of a score would it probably have to be for Washington to win? It would have been like a 17-14, 17-12 score. It's exactly how it turned out. And how were they able to exert their will on a USC team playing at home with a lot more talent? That's the question that we keep trying to answer.
We have one more voicemail question for you and then a couple just regular ones. So I'll play this voicemail right now. Here you go, Dan.
Dan Weber, JD from D.C. Dan, in the aftermath of last night's debacle, it seems to me the fans need to get a bit more realistic regarding coaching changes, however desirable. It's pretty clear to me that Sark will never get an extension, but it's also pretty clear he will get this year and probably next year. Consider acknowledging fully what we saw last night, and it isn't going to change. We're probably going to lose 5, even 6 games. But unlike Kiffin, we're not going to get blown out, and Sark unlikely will lose the team. Notre Dame, Oregon, Utah, UCLA, these are not great teams. We have far too much talent and character on this team. Sark is trying to be a head coach. Wilcox has quietly shifted to a 4-man front rush, and they are leaning heavily on the freshmen. Players like the staff, and they're playing hard. There are going to be no tarmac firings, especially with Hayden so deep with this hire. And then also, absent a proven head coach who can recruit and win in the Pac-12, why would Max Nekias let Pat Hayden choose the next coach and then retire? Max would take all the heat. Chip Kelly ain't coming back. Winnington's buyout is formidable. Shaw and Peterson are not coming to L.A. And even Graham seems a bit rough around the edges. Absent these guys, anyone else is a risk unless their last name is Saban, Harbaugh, Meyer, or McKay. Plus, can USC be affording to pay 2 staff for an entire decade? Most likely scenario is Nekias needs to name a new AD over the summer or next fall, and he is the fall guy if the next coach selection failed.
Yeah, I think JD makes a lot of good points. Do you have, the retiring or soon to retire AD make this hire, in light of the Sark hire and how that went? And again, how much of that was, who had the final say on that in terms of, or how that process went. And that is the question. If it's going to that, I do think there's a real question as to do you get next year? I think as Sark said today, there's a lot of football to be played. And I think that's going to determine, where next year fits into this picture. As far as the money, USC spent $7 million, wrote off $7 million in transition costs between what it costs to bring in this staff to buy out, you know, some of the people and to, you know, pay off some of the people who were, you know, an Ed Orgeron, a Clancy Pendergast, a John Baxter. Those guys all, you know, were getting, you know, paid off by USC. You were buying out Wilcox's contract at Washington. But I think the bottom line was that cost them $7 million. You probably wouldn't want to get into that situation again. Although, you know, if push comes to shove, much the way what might happen at Texas will happen with a booster, you know, offering to underwrite certain costs if they really feel, you know, strongly enough that something drastic has to happen. I mean, I think there are ways you can get around the money situation. I think the biggest part of the money situation for USC coming up is how are they going to raise the hundreds of millions of dollars for the Coliseum renovation. I mean, I think that's a real something that really impacts the president's decision, Pat Hayden's decision. You know, Pat's kind of committed to raising those, you know, as much as $500 million. How do you do that in this current climate? Or, you know, can you do that in this current climate? So I think that one may impact, you know, as much as anything. And I agree, there aren't always those coaches that you saw. I thought last year there really weren't the kind. I mean, everybody had something going on. This year, I think there are some people who you could look at and say, you know, it's hard to, you know, fault this guy or it's hard to fault that guy. Last year, it just didn't seem like, you know, the selection or a year, technically, I guess, 2 years ago, didn't seem like, you know, the availability was there. But I think you have a sense of who might be able. I mean, we've fought so much. One of the things, I think USC and the fans have thought so much about what it takes to be successful with this job. They looked at it through the Lane Kiffin years. They looked at it, you know, through the NCAA sanctions. They looked at it through Ed Orgeron's transition year. They've looked at it through the Sark hiring process in his first 2 years now. And I think there's a whole lot of focus on how this has to go. And my guess would be it will not be like, you know, kind of a closed process the way it was the last time where, you know, where they really didn't go out and didn't do, you know, they'll probably still, you know, you would still have Corn Ferry go out and do the things they do, whether that actually means anything or that's just a cover, I don't know. But I think JD might be overstating the possibility of something happening because there are a lot of things that are involved in this. And I just don't know where all the pressure points are.
One last one for you, Dan, from Tarek. He wanted to know about Damian Mama. He says, does Damian Mama need to lose even more weight? He looks slow when he pulls a majority of the time. Simple one from
Tarek. He has gotten down to 340, and he's serious. He's trying to lose more. So I know when you say 340 down to 340, but I would have thought as athletic as he was when he was pushing, you know, 400, that you get him down to 340 and that's going to make a big difference. I haven't noticed as big a difference as maybe I thought I would see. And again, some of that, this offensive line surprises me in that they still look a little lumbering and they still look a little bit like they've got some freshmen in them. And they're, you know, I know teams are taking advantage and shooting the gaps and running behind, but, for example, last night, they really ran the ball well, and yet they had a ton of blown-up plays. 11 tackles for losses Washington got. That's really unacceptable, especially with the quality of USC's running backs and the plays they were able to make. So is that Is that scheme? Is it execution? Is it players just maybe aren't athletic? And I know I was talking about it this week. I guess Toa was talking about how one of the reasons they did want to get him to lose some weight was so that they could run a stretch play and that they could be athletic enough to block it. And it's not man on man. You're basically zone blocking and moving. And, you know, is that something that this team has to say, you know what, maybe that's not perfectly suited for us. Maybe we need to do more man on man stuff. And maybe we need to do more, you know, and get away. Obviously they pretty much seem to, you know, get away from the stretch play. But, you know, I would like to see them take a real hard look at the design of the run game, and be able to take advantage of all those big athletic guys and their stable of running backs. I mean, maybe this is a team that, you know, needs to go in a different direction to say, you know, to some extent, just because of the number of, I mean, they weren't able to keep pressure off Cody. They weren't able to keep from 11 tackles for losses. So something's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not getting it all right. And, you know, they gotta get it all right. This is an impossible game to win at the level college football is being played at right now if you don't get things pretty much exactly the way you need them to be. Washington did last night. Is amazing, and USC didn't even come close.
Yeah,
and that's what happens.
I want 2 points on the offensive line, Dan. I wanted to make one. I do agree with you on the scheme wise. It's some of the running plays, like the quick stuff up the middle, seems to work pretty well. A lot of the outside stuff to me seems very slow developing. And if you watch, you can see the defense. It's not just about the point of attack and the blocks that are being made by the offensive line. But it seems like there's people filling in the gaps, you know, frequently and right away when you're doing a lot of those wide runs. And so it seems to me like it's just kind of slow developing. They're allowing the defense to kind of catch up to them. And you just don't have enough guys to block everybody. Sometimes you don't block it well either. But even when you got a hat on every hat that you can and you make a good block, there's still more guys coming in that they've kind of seen the play develop and they know what's coming. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And the other one was, you know, Steve Sarkisian on the conference call today, he said he didn't want to make an excuse about Max Turk being out, and that's what was going on. But if you watch, as soon as Turk came out of the game, they moved to Olobendon to center. They ran the football right down the field, and they ran the ball well after that. I think they feel confident, you know, with the 7 or 8 guys that they kind of were using in the rotation. Yeah, I mean, you ideally you want your starting, you know, All-American candidate center in there. But it didn't seem to me that if you're trying to go and run the football, having Toa Lobodon in there didn't seem to hurt them.
No, not on the run game. It was pretty obvious. You know, I thought they executed it really well. I thought the timing, was excellent. I mean, it's obvious linebackers are reading cues. And if USC starts to run that stretch play, they're flying through whatever gap they could get and trying to pursue from the backside. And they're just running guys down. I mean, it's just, and guys are selling out. And I think they, people have gone to school on back-to-back Stanford and Arizona State. And what you have to do, you have to hurt people. You have to make them, if you're going to be a linebacker and basically just, you know, leave your area, you've got to run stuff. You know, you got to run counters. You got to run, you know, other things. Or if the guy's, you know, looking for that, you know, the stretch play, and he's just, well, then run something quick and get up there, you know, before he's ready to, you know, if they've got him, you know, geared up to run, you know, run through gaps and pursue from the backside. But I don't know that they do that enough, or they don't stick with it once they do it. And, I mean, Ronald Jones, I mean, obviously after the one drive, all you wanted to do, and the entire stadium wanted to see him get the ball more. You know, keep giving it to him. And that didn't happen. I think they really have to go over, you know, what's happening on the sidelines, what's the communication like, what is the ability to adjust in the flow of the game and to say, you know what, we don't need to do that other stuff. They can't stop this. And until they stop this, we're not going to stop doing it. But you don't stop yourself. If they can't stop it, you just keep doing it. And that's probably one of the things that bothers fans the most is the other team doesn't even have to stop USC. USC stops USC.
Well, that was our emergency podcast on a Friday after a Thursday night game, Dan. We appreciate you coming on. It was a busy night for all of us, staying up, you know, wee hours in the morning and kind of, you know, writing about this team and putting videos up about this team and talking about this team. So we wanted to do a podcast. And so thanks for everyone for sending their questions in. And thank you, Dan, for coming on short notice.
Yeah, those are good questions, too. And we'll let you know when we get some answers. I would, you know, this is one of those times you would love to be in the meetings and watching the film and hearing what people are saying to one another when they're seeing what we think we're seeing. What does it mean to them? Going forward, where do they go? And how do they decide, here's who our team is going to be. Here's how we're going to beat people. Here's how we win football games. Here's who we are. When push comes to shove, we know who we are, and we know how we're going to beat you. And it was crazy that Washington had the answer to every one of those questions last night, and it didn't look like USC had the answer to any of those questions. How is that possible? That's the question.
That is the question. Well, we'll see. USC practices on Sunday, I believe, Dan. We'll be out there on Sunday.
Sunday morning.
So yep. We'll check that out, and we'll get you any more answers we can. But thanks so much, Dan, for coming on the show. And everyone else, thank you so much for tuning into our emergency edition of the Peristyle Podcast on a Friday. We're going to have a bunch more. We'll have more podcasts and stuff coming up. So definitely check in over the weekend. We will keep producing these. Keep sending in your questions. We appreciate it all, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.